Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. Thanks for joining me this week. In this week's episode, Microsoft tells IT to deploy Windows 7 now. Project 2010 products are announced. The IASA launches a professional certification for architects. And Google buys ReCAPTCHA. Plus an excerpt of an interview with Carl Treves of Vive Networks. All that and more after this quick break here on Redmond Radio. Welcome once again, and thanks for joining me here on Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. And as always, I welcome your feedback on this show at mdomingo at 1105media.com. That's mdomingo at 1105media.com. If you want to record a quick message to me via phone, you can call me at 949-265-1564 and leave a message there. You can also catch the show on redmondradio.podbean.com. That's redmondradio.podbean.com. If you want to download the show automatically via iTunes, for example. The Podbean version of the show always includes more information, such as the IT Web Gems segment, and once in a while I'll announce contests there that are only available by looking at the description page at redmondradio.podbean.com. Redmond Radio listeners via the Podbean version can find out how to win an mcpmag.com cap currently, so check it out. Later on in this podcast, I also have an excerpt from an interview I did with Carl Treves, the CTO over at F5 Networks. All right, let's get right to it and talk Redmond news. Microsoft's chief financial officer for the online services division fielded questions at the Deutsche Bank Technology Conference in San Francisco last Tuesday. The online services division is a favorite target of financial analysts because of the operating expense losses that turn up each quarter in Microsoft's financial statements. Microsoft has been trying to catch up for years with front-runner Google in search advertising, and investors apparently are nervous. Rick Vandergooy, corporate vice president and CFO of the online services division, addressed the losses question by saying the expectations for the division are commensurate with the market position that we have. He also explained that the search product can only get better when a company gains more search users, which was one of the reasons why Microsoft inked its recent deal with Yahoo. Search advertising is all a matter of scale, and the Yahoo deal aims to boost the total number of Bing users. The increased numbers will both improve Bing search results and meet advertiser demands for more ad viewers. Vandergooy explained about the Yahoo deal. On our side, the benefit will be from being able to bring in additional advertisers onto one single platform, and that will result in an ability to cover advertiser terms and search keywords better than we've been able to do in the past. He suggested that the Microsoft Yahoo deal might amount to a combined search market share of roughly 30%, adding that the scale disadvantage that we think we are currently suffering from should be mostly wiped out in the U.S. at least. Regulators in the U.S. are currently reviewing the Microsoft Yahoo search advertising deal. The European Commission is also reviewing the deal, according to a Reuters story. The deal could get regulatory approvals by early 2010. Microsoft did get a bit of good news going into the talk. Nielsen reported a 22% bump in U.S. market use of Microsoft's search engine in August compared with July. That result puts Microsoft in third place in the U.S. search market with a 10.7% share. Microsoft is behind Yahoo at 16% and Google at 64.6%. StatCounter found a slightly lower number for Microsoft's U.S. search market share than Nielsen, reporting a 9.6% share in August. StatCounter also found a far lower bump in U.S. being used from July to August, reporting just a 0.2% share increase in use. The Microsoft Project Conference 2009 event kicked off in Phoenix last Wednesday with new details about the next generation of Microsoft's software products for project planning. First, Microsoft announced that it will release a public beta of Microsoft Project 2010 sometime later this year. Then the company plans to reduce the number of editions from 4 to 3. Those 3 editions include Project 2010 Standard, Professional, and Server. Microsoft plans to extend its Fluent User Interface, or Ribbon UI, first seen in Office 2007, in the new Project 2010 products. Said Seth Patton, Senior Director of Product Marketing for Microsoft Project, in a telephone interview, "We have made the product dramatically easier to use for the average Office user, and we have broadened the functionality to meet the needs of a variety of users. The new planning apps will integrate with Microsoft SharePoint Server 2010, enabling collaboration capabilities. Project 2010 will also sync with Outlook 2007 and 2010. Project Server 2010, which rides on top of SharePoint Server in the stack, has been beefed up in the new offering to include Portfolio Server, which was a separate product in Microsoft's 2007 release. Project Server 2010 will also enable user-controlled scheduling as a decision support tool that can be accessed from a browser. The client versions of Project 2010 will run on Windows 7, Vista, and XP. Server requirements include Project Server 2010 and SharePoint Server 2010. Hosted versions of the product will be available through Microsoft's hosting partner network that currently supports Project 2007. Microsoft Project is now used by more than 10,000 customers, with north of 20 million users, according to Seth Patton. Microsoft put out the word last Monday that IT organizations can start deploying Windows 7 now, citing the cost benefits of doing so. Windows 7 was released to Microsoft's volume licensing subscribers last month. And a few weeks ago, the company rolled out a set of tools designed to help IT pros automate Windows 7 deployments, known as the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit 2010. The company plans to release a set of Windows 7 administration tools in late October for software assurance customers, known as the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack 2009R2. Microsoft has been touting a number of features available in the Windows 7 Enterprise Edition that can potentially ease the lives of IT pros. Those features include Direct Access, which helps remote users connect to the corporate network without a virtual private network. Another is Branch Cache, which speeds up data access at remote locations. And then there's BitLocker, which provides security for removable storage devices and laptops, although it was first introduced with Windows Vista. Last Monday, Microsoft released a beta of the Infrastructure Planning and Design Guide for Direct Access. Still, the main interest for many IT pros will be any possible time or cost benefits to installing Windows 7 in their environments. Many IT departments haven't upgraded to Vista and continue to use the venerable XP operating system, which retains an 86% use rate among Windows-based PCs in the enterprise. That, according to a second quarter 2009 report by Forrester Research. To assure companies that Windows 7 is ready to deploy now, Microsoft produced its own total cost of ownership estimates, as described in a Windows blog that they posted. Redmond compiled its numbers based on the experiences of three early adopter companies. Microsoft claims that Windows 7 can potentially save IT departments time and money by reducing costs associated with PC management, PC power use, and server desk calls, according to the Windows blog. So far, few analyst firms have compiled independent TCO estimates of Windows 7 or Windows Server 2008R2. Richard Jones, the Vice President and Service Director at the Burton Group, said that Windows 7 will have less strict hardware requirements than Vista, but any benefits in terms of overall maintenance are unclear right now. He noted that security maintenance issues may become a factor in the near future. Jones explained in an email, "We suspect that at first it will be less costly until the installed base market share of Win 7 surpasses Win XP, expected in about 3 years at the earliest," he said. "At that point, Windows 7's security measures should make the cost of ownership less than XP, especially since XP will no longer be receiving security patches." Deploying Windows 7 may or may not save money, according to Michael Cherry, Research Vice President for Operating Systems at Directions in Microsoft. He says it all depends on an IT department's deployment plan. Cherry noted in an email that organizations should be careful that they are not moving support costs from one budget line to another, he said. So organizations should treat TCO studies like EPA mileage estimates. Your mileage may vary. On Thursday, Microsoft announced that it had commenced an invitation-only public technical preview of Microsoft Office web apps. The invitees were a select group of SkyDrive customers, according to the Windows Live blog. SkyDrive is part of Microsoft's Windows Live online service offerings and provides a hosted space for storing and sharing files. Those who didn't get an invitation can get a notification from Microsoft when the public beta of Office web apps is released by filling out a form on the website. Currently, Office web apps can be tested in English and Japanese, but Microsoft plans to add other language versions sometime in the fall. The hosted apps that Microsoft unveiled last Thursday include Excel Web App, PowerPoint Web App, and Word Web App. All are lightweight web versions of the applications found in the traditionally premises-installed Office Productivity Suite. Office Web Apps will integrate with installed Office versions from Office 2003 onward. When the Office Web Apps are released as a final product, users will be able to save documents to the web directly from the desktop-installed Office Suite. Microsoft hasn't yet added all the features to the test versions of Office Web Apps. For instance, testers will be limited to viewing and sharing Word documents for the time being. But testers of Excel Web App and PowerPoint Web App will also be able to create and edit documents online. Office Web Apps run in the browser and retain the same formatting and attributes seen in the desktop app. Supported browsers include IE, Firefox, and Safari. The apps work across both PC and Mac platforms. Users can collaborate on the same document using Office web apps, and change will sync across the internet, appearing in near real time without refreshing the browser. Office web apps use the same Fluent Ribbon user interface that Microsoft introduced in Office 2007. Office web apps will be an adjunct to Microsoft Office 2010, which is scheduled for general release in the first half of next year. They integrate seamlessly with Windows Live via SkyDrive, allowing editing, collaboration, and document sharing. Microsoft eventually plans to make Office web apps available to its 500 million users of Hotmail, Messenger, and other Windows Live services. For business users, Microsoft plans to offer Office web apps through volume licensing, with Microsoft SharePoint Server as the on-premises hosting option. Alternatively, businesses will be able to access Office web apps on a subscription basis through Microsoft Online Services. Microsoft didn't include the OneNote web app in this public preview, but indicated in a press release that it would be available at a later date. Microsoft plans to release feature-complete Office web apps in the first half of next year. And guess what? That's our first break. We'll continue with more news in a second. For now, let's break for this message from 1105 Media, sponsored by Microsoft. Attend Microsoft TechEd Europe 2009 this November 9th through the 13th in Berlin, Germany. Whether you're an IT professional or developer, the opportunity to learn, explore, and connect with the technology and the people that will shape the future takes place at TechEd Europe in mid-November. Take advantage of a special offer by registering before September 30th and receive a 300 euro discount off the full price point of 2,195 euros plus VAT. For details, go to www.microsoft.com/europe/TechEd. And welcome back to Redmond Radio. The Industry Association of Software Architects last week launched a professional certification program. They used an event in New York to introduce that certification. At the event, they brought together some of the leading architects for the first time. Among them, Grady Booch, Len Bass, John Zachman, and Eric Evans. Paul Preece, IASA's CEO, in a recent interview, said that to get them all together in one place was actually relatively challenging. Many of these people have never actually met before, which is surprising. William Zachman, who's best known for his work creating the Framework for Enterprise Architecture, following a 26-year career at IBM, delivered the opening keynote. The IASA used a 3-day conference to launch the new certification for IT and software architects. The IASA had recently launched a foundation level of its new Certified IT Architect program to give architects more career opportunities and recognition of their roles by IT and business executives. The new professional CITA program involves more extensive training, and according to Preece, it's a full board examination by a set of peers that actually tests an architect on their ability to deliver against the IASA skills taxonomy. Microsoft had hoped to host the event, but renovations in its New York office required IASA to find another location. Novell last week released MonoTouch 1.0, a tool designed to let programmers who use Microsoft's .NET framework develop applications for iPhone and iPod devices. MonoTouch is the first tool to come from the Mono project, targeted at a mobile platform. The Mono project is an effort organized by Novell to bring .NET and Windows-centric development languages and platforms to Linux, Unix, Macintosh, and other OSs. Miguel de Icaza, founder of the Mono project and a Novell VP, said the decision to develop MonoTouch came from a campaign by .NET developers seeking an alternative tool to develop for the iPhone. While Apple boasts more than 50,000 applications on its App Store, building applications for the iPhone primarily requires developers to program in C and Apple's Objective-C languages, which isn't appealing to many enterprise development shops. MonoTouch 1.0 consists of a software development kit that can be integrated into Novell's MonoDevelop, an IDE that allows C# and Visual Basic developers to use their .NET-based use code and libraries for the iPhone. Google announced last week that it will soon offer a set of cloud services to government through apps.gov. Expected to go live in 2010, Google's government cloud offering will offer Google apps in a dedicated environment within undisclosed Google facilities in the U.S., according to Matthew Glotzbach, Google's Director of Enterprise Product Management. The federal offering of Google apps will be distinguishable from the standard business offering in a number of ways, he said. Specifically, the facilities used will meet the security requirements of the Federal Information Security Management Act. Because federal agencies must comply with FISMA, some agency officials have raised questions about how cloud computing offerings for agencies could be covered under that law. FISMA compliance could add a number of additional steps for Google. The company will have to put the employees who oversee the operations through specific background checks mandated by agencies. Government services would have to reside on their own servers and be accessed only by approved personnel. Glatzbach noted that the government services would reside across multiple facilities within the continental U.S., though he declined to state the specific location of any of these facilities. He did note that multiple live copies of the data would be made for customers. Third-party auditors would verify the integrity of the government-specific data and applications, as per FISMA guidelines. Pricing for the government-specific offering has not been determined. Glatzbach added that state and local agencies may also use the services. How about one more bit of news before we head to a break? Google's acquisition of open-source security technology firm ReCAPTCHA could help the search giant's internet security. The acquisition was announced on Google's blog last Wednesday. ReCAPTCHA's technology checks for human users on the web by presenting text that's difficult for machines to recognize. The technology can be used for protection against malware and fraud, as well as thwarting spam. It can also be used to improve optical character reading of printed text, something that Google is involved with as part of its Google Books book scanning project. The text presented to users is called a CAPTCHA, which is an acronym for Completely Automatic Public Turing Test to tell computers and humans apart. CAPTCHA also helps protect comment sections on websites from machine-injected spam. Some observers, though, think that the Google ReCAPTCHA investment could be a watershed moment as threats grow on the Internet. The acquisition shows that the company is seriously responding to the malware bot threat that can hijack or devalue Google's online offerings, according to Don Leatham, Senior Director of Solutions and Strategy over at Lumentum. Leatham said, as the industry continues to move to a software-as-a-service model, new security models need to meet threats that target the viability of the SaaS approach. CAPTCHA text can curtail spammers and keep phishers at bay for a time, but human ingenuity and smarter botnets could undo such technology. For this reason, Philip Lieberman, president of Lieberman Software, isn't impressed with the deal or the technology. Lieberman explains, as soon as sites implement CAPTCHA, the scammers can hire third-world labor to visit the protected sites and fill out the forms by hand. The more sophisticated scammers have developed artificial intelligence pattern recognition software, and audio options can also be broken with voice recognition software. The value of ReCAPTCHA's technology will depend on how it affects the economics of botnets, according to Mike Murray, Vice President of Professional Services at Foreground Security. Said Murray, if Google becomes a harder target, the value of botnets theoretically goes down somewhat, and hackers will retrench. Let's take a quick break before the excerpt interview with Carl Treves at F5 Networks. Right here on Ribbon Radio. Welcome back once again to Ribbon Radio. As promised, here's a short 3-minute segment with Carl Treves. He's the CTO of F5 Networks, a company who specializes in secure infrastructure development and delivery. He's been talking about the importance of virtualization lately, and here he explains why virtualization is a trend, but one that's worth paying attention to.
I think the key thing that we're seeing is we're seeing some architectural trends in the data center, and virtualization is a key enabler to support these different trends. And one of the big issues that companies and service providers and these cloud providers are having today is this whole notion of how do I expand my capacity to support the growing needs of my consumer base, because internet traffic is continuing to grow at a pretty substantial rate, but doing this with manageable costs and being able to reduce my energy footprint and et cetera. And you're seeing this exaggerated this problem in at Google and Amazon and Microsoft, because they're trying to build out these massive data centers, and so they're experiencing a lot of these pain points, and they're looking to new architectures to go off and address these issues. And virtualization is a key component to actually doing that, because one of the things that hasn't been done as efficiently in the past as it can be now is this notion of getting better utilization out of your server infrastructure. And with that better utilization, you get a better power footprint. We can call that green computing, but what it comes down to is that I'm getting per watt, per CPU cycle, I'm getting more output out of my server infrastructure. Now the thing that also needs to be addressed, though, at the same time with that is, I still have applications that need to run efficiently in the environment. So I also need to make sure that I'm making taking the best advantage of my networking resources at the same time with this new server infrastructure. And that's really where we focus our efforts, is providing essentially that tie, that connection between the application running in these virtual machines out to the end users that are trying to access that, and providing that high efficiency, security, et cetera, that goes along with that. And when you look at the seven key challenges of working in these virtual environments, those are the problems that we're trying to address, is, again, taking those applications and getting those out to the end users in a very efficient way, and maintaining the goals of getting better efficiency out of my infrastructure.
Would you dismiss that notion that virtualization is a trend?
No, it's absolutely a trend. And the reason I say it's a trend, it's actually a key component of this larger trend, as I was saying, of enterprises and companies trying to get better utilization out of their infrastructure. And it's a key component to doing that. So the technology that it provides, again, is that ability to get better utilization from the server. So it's definitely something that we're going to see more and more of and leverage more and more. And today it's primarily, you see, virtualization in test environments, especially in enterprises. But what you're seeing now is like the large cloud providers are leveraging that throughout their infrastructure. And what I expect is that the enterprises will start to leverage that architecture more and more in their application infrastructure as well.
You can catch a more extended version of the interview with Carl, in which he talks about the seven challenges of implementing virtualization solutions. You can hear that interview over at redmondradio.podbean.com. For now, that's this week's episode of Redmond Radio. And as usual, I'd like to say thanks once again to all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass this show on to their colleagues. I'm Michael Domingo. I'll chat with you next week right here on Redmond Radio.